Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Everyone thinks I had a storybook career, that I just sprang into Disney Channel stardom overnight, made millions, and lived happily ever after. Spoiler alert, I didn't. There were countless failures along the way, and there still are. How I deal with that struggle and how I pivot when failure creeps in is what allows me to keep going, keep learning, and keep striving for balance. The Vulnerable Podcast is an invitation to hang out every week with me, Christy Carlson Romano, as I invite friends, celebrities, and experts for in-depth conversations discussing the good, the complicated, the beauty of being human, and what it means to be vulnerable. Join me every Tuesday as we navigate the ups and downs of my guests' paths to success.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to another episode of Murph Rants About the Referee. This week's episode is we feature on Mike Adamson of Scotland. Murph, you have 90 minutes. The floor is yours.
It's at the point where I should make notes. Actually, instead of watching Ireland Italy today, I watched the first half of England Wales again. And honestly, there was so many talking points, not just the ref now.
No.
So many talking points throughout the game. You could have had 80 talking points because there was something every minute which was contentious or noteworthy or worth talking about.
Well, that's what makes these podcasts great on these weekends. It's when it's like Cardiff versus Benetton and there's barely a talking point throughout it that we struggle.
Yeah.
Go on, Murph.
You could easily... the three of us sit here and do a watch through and pause it every time something fucking stupid happened and to discuss that. And then the next minute, something else. The tone was set from the kickoff. We didn't feel the kickoff. We cocked it up. They were attacking. Ooh. And I think in our 22, maybe second or third ruck, it was a good tackle on an English player. And Dan Bigger was in a really good jackal position. And Henry Slade just came in from basically our side of the ruck. So Dan Bigger ended up being rucked forward, if you like, forward into the English side, onto his head, ended up sitting on his arse and was just doing that Dan Bigger thing of his arms open, looking at the touch judge. Touch judge did nothing, which, you know, I suppose you'd expect. And that set the tone, really, for most of it.
Yeah, it's obviously we're going to get into the most contentious ones. We haven't genuinely, even if I gave you 90 minutes, Murph, we wouldn't have time to go through all of the talking points.
I could try it. I definitely could have a good crack at that.
Patreon special coming up there for real gluttons of punishment.
Yeah.
It's just like
even I wouldn't listen to that.
80 minutes in, and another thing.
Yeah.
But obviously, we're going to look at the bigger picture as well. We got listeners' questions. Ultimately, Wales came up short, ended up 17 points down, but very, you know, could conceivably have won that game. It was a bizarre game of rugby. How did you find it watching on the telly, Murph? Me and Dan were in the ground. I want to get Dan's opinion on that in a sec. But how did you find it as a spectacle watching on the telly?
Agony as a, you know, one-eyed Welshman, just agony. I'm glad I watched it at home, my wife, because no one else got to see me completely losing my composure in the living room. And in fact, I know she eavesdrops on my recording, but she doesn't listen to the podcast.
That's another Patreon special where we just put a camera in your living room, Murph.
I'd just like to publicly apologise to my wife and the cat and all the neighbourhood cats, because they were all just doing a runner out of the room because I was losing my shit, really, like totally going nuts. And, you know, like I say, it's harder. Watching Wales play England is hard enough as it is. But that was tough. And now she's throat to bombing me on Zoom. So, she wasn't best pleased with me, but that's, you know, that's how hard it is to support Wales.
It is, Dan. What did you make of it, like, quality-wise and as a spectacle from the stands?
Yeah, I thought it was... I couldn't believe, first of all, that we were only... They weren't sort of 20... Probably sort of 20 points up after about 15 minutes. I thought we were under the pump so much. Obviously, the ref gave us absolutely nothing. But... we were clinging on big time, I thought, in the first 15, 20, 25. I thought from the stands that the ref, that all the officials, not just the ref, all the officials were beyond poor. But you know what it's like when you're in the ground, you think, am I being, you know, you haven't got the greatest of views of you. Yeah. And, you know, obviously... Yeah, maybe the one-eyed thing comes into play, but I always try and put a bit of balance on. But I was flummoxed by a number of the decisions, stuff like the obvious stuff that you could see in the ground, the offsides, the, you know, the inconsistencies, all those things. And then when I came back then to see some of the more closer points that I couldn't see, they were all there and evident as well. So, I left. I couldn't after the first half. I was quite perplexed, really, as to what was going on. It was a really weird game.
I put a message out to you boys on the group because I couldn't understand. It felt really weird. Like, I had no concept of what really was going on. I was just like, why have we lost every single breakdown? And, you know, obviously watching the game back, you can see that some of that is down to refereeing. Some of it is just down to insanely bad basics getting wrong, you know, just not even flying in off your feet. It's like it would be less obvious flying in off your feet than it is to just seal a ball off like Basham and Rowlands did. You know, it's, they're just really, really basic errors. And it was a really odd game to kind of get a gauge of. And when you look back at those refereeing decisions, there was a load of inconsistency at the breakdown, and, you know, players not rolling away for Wales, but then England not getting pinged for the same things. Line out offences, Itoje, you know, pulling on Adam Beard's arm and nothing being given there, and then vice versa, a penalty getting given. And then obviously the biggest talking point has been the England try, which I think for me, I could kind of forgive if it was a straightforward try, them not going to the TMO for a line out offence, and Itoje's been clever and he's nudged him, and it should have been a penalty, but no one spotted it. What I don't get is that was not a clear and obvious grounding. So if you would have gone to the TMO for the grounding, they would then have seen the line out offence, come back, penalty Wales. That's the bit that I was really frustrated with. It didn't look like a clear and obvious grounding to me. As he goes to put the ball down, some legs come flying through, and I've yet to see a convincing grounding of that ball, unless I've just not seen this. Am I going mad here?
That's a good question. Because I was questioning my sanity yesterday watching that game. Because if you will remember very well that during the Ireland game, Jekyll Piper, I put out that message at halftime. Is it just me?
Yeah.
And yesterday, I was starting to think it is just me, because every game, like obviously we mentioned Scotland, the referee was fine, Matt Berry. But every game now feels like they're on top of us. And I'm thinking, well, it's just me being one-eyed. It can't be the ref all the time. It can't be the ref all the time. It's just me being a victim, you know, because I'm a small country, big country, all that stuff. But then today, when the reactions came in off Twitter, it's like, oh, okay, I'm not mad. Mm. Yeah, I'm not. I am actually a sane person. So, yeah, it's the ground. I mean, aside from just going back to your point about the try and the grounding, aside from the Itoje nudge, which stopped Beard getting off the ground, even if he doesn't nudge him, he's already closed the gap. Before he touches him, it's a penalty. Before
Absolutely.
He even touches him. He didn't enforce the gap all game. And that's why there were so many line-out penalties, because they're just too close to each other. The grounding, I just thought it wasn't going to come to the ground. I just thought they would get pulled back. Mm. Yeah, from what I can tell, some TV coverage today, the referee asked if he needed to look at the line-out, and the TMO said, no, line-out is fine. So that's who was the TMO?
Brian McNeice, whatever his name is.
Yeah, he's in my black book. Mate.
Yeah,
right in there. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's things like that.
Reynal,
right?
Piper, Adamson, McNeice, or whatever his name is.
I mean, it's I could quite happily sit here and moan about the ref for an hour, but I'll try not to. I just thought, it's an utterly bizarre game of rugby. Like, a really spirited... I've got to hand it to Wales. That was a spirited second half, and they could have won it. And particularly when you're 17-0 down at that gaff, it's very easy for the wheels to come off. But, I mean, England didn't come out in the second half. I thought they were absolutely awful. Wales were... You know, refereeing aside, there were just too many basic errors in that first half. I still don't know what to think about it, because there were definitely some positives in there. By way, you know, I thought that was Thomas Williams' best game in a red shirt. You know, lots of stuff in there to like.
Possibly Cuthbert.
I think Cuthbert was man of the match, if I'm honest.
And I do. Yeah, I don't know why. I still can't work out why Marcus Smith was man of the match.
I thought Smith played well. He looked very good, and you know, he had an armchair ride for most of the game, because
if he's man of the match, where's all the tries they scored?
Yeah.
Because that's what he's there for. So he's kicked the penalties, missed a sitter, and made. I counted about three half breaks. Arguably, Itoje outplayed him completely. Itoje was had more influence.
And I thought
Dombrand
did as well.
Yeah. Well, it was a forward. It was a breakdown based game, wasn't it? So those boys who did all the disrupting, you know, just stopped Wales getting any game together. And so he's the new. Obviously, we do this, don't we, about the media? But he's the new poster boy. So long as he doesn't have a shocker, he's probably going to be man of the match every time he's plays for England.
Yeah. I mean, this is just madness, though, isn't it? Because I thought, you know, but this is the polarizing social media world that we live in. That it's either Marcus Smith is all hype and he's actually rubbish and he played terribly today, or it's he's man of the match. And you know, based on what I saw, the truth was somewhere in the middle. I thought he played well behind a pack that was generally the better pack on the day. But there were definitely individuals who shone more than him for me.
Plenty.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, he said we could talk about the ref for 80 minutes plus. That is one other thing. the first Cuthy break, I think, where he passed out where he passed out the back to Moriarty. And then Moriarty was tackled by Tom Curry. And then the ball came forward somehow, and it ended up a scrum to Wales, right?
Yeah.
There was only two players on the floor, and the only way for it to be a scrum to Wales is if it was a knock-on by Curry.
Yeah.
If it was a knock-on by
Curry, he was lying on the
ground at the time, so it can't actually be a fucking scrum. It can only be a penalty to us.
Yeah.
And that's another instance where no replay was shown to the TV. The TMO didn't want to know at all, obviously, as we know. But the TMO did find time to find the sneakiest cheat by a player, and a deserving yellow card, by the way, Liam did find time to write the sneakiest, slyest cheat I've seen possibly since, I don't know, since McCaw retired. Yeah. And found that, no one saw it in real time, but he found that one. The obvious one, which was in open play, no one around it. It must have had four cameras on it, not picked up on at all. So, that's why I said I question my sanity, yes, because you start to think you're a conspiracy theorist.
Oh, you're absolutely sane, Myth. It was
just,
everyone's with
it's
you.
Just that bad. You just can't, the TMO just was, I don't know.
I think the refs would also look back at that, you know, as a collective and think, God, we got it. We had an absolute howler. Not just a poor game. You know, they were awful from start to finish. Though it didn't. Yeah. I've seen some things that he started to get a bit better from the 60th minute. He was making errors all the way through. Really, as a unit, they were for me.
He's got cover on the line-out decision because he did ask if there was anything to see, and the TMO said no. But you're right. He was still bloody awful at the breakdown. Some of the breakdown, obviously, we weren't helping ourselves. Presenting back is not great. Not enough. We got it's a disease, I think, in Welsh rugby of not committing enough men to attacking rucks. They all want to be in position so they can do the one-up bullshit that comes to nothing. So if you're going to just start hang around in the backs doing one-up bollocks, you'd just well be in the ruck.
One thing I did get quite a good view of, so sat in the south stand, is you could see the shape. And again, there was a lot of neither one thing nor the other, neither committing to the ruck nor actually having a proper shape in the back line. So you're kind of like moving in towards a ruck, but not getting there. And then you're out of position when the ball comes your way anyway. So it was that stuff again is, you know, I don't know, you hope it comes with time, but that's really, really frustrating stuff. Because you don't get many opportunities to win at England. And I thought England were really, really poor in that second half, and we're 100% there for the taking.
I can't see them winning another game. Ireland at home, France away.
Yeah, I think Ireland
without a massive improvement on their own
if,
part.
If they play anything like that against Ireland, Ireland will have them. And France, I think look every inch the Grand Slam side.
Yeah, good thing for them is that they can like. They were really poor, weren't they? They still won, and they can get so much better, can't they? I don't know whether they can though, with Eddie and what they do.
He doesn't want to be picking this side. I don't think it just doesn't feel right. You know, the minute Manu is, I know Manu is world class, and he'd make that back line look a lot better. But, you know, they're doing what we're chucking Toby back in, which we will come on to later because he was imperious, I thought. We're chucking him back because we're desperate. We're like, look, we haven't got another eight. We all know that. Let's get him back in the side. He's got the biggest player base in Europe. And they're dragging Tuilagi back in after, what, a game and a half of rugby. And I know it's a different injury, wasn't it? It was his hamstring, I think. But you can't be.
The thing is with Tuilagi, you've got to put him in quick because it won't be long before he's fucking injured again.
No, that's true.
So, they can't hang around if they wait till the last game. You'd have had another two matches to sail and be laid up again. So, mates of mine have said, why do they bother with him? He's just never fit. Mm. Why do they bother with him? But he is head and shoulders their best back.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why it's. And it's made worse by the fact when he's injured, rather than place him with like for like, you can't do like for like, obviously they haven't got another massive Polynesian centre, but rather than pick an actual inside centre, they play someone out of the position, which makes the miss of Tuilagi even, it compounds the miss, if you know what I mean.
It feels like
that's the strangest thing though, isn't it? If they had someone that they're not going to be like for like, but they could use somebody, couldn't they, better than what they're doing to make it sort of a little bit similar, have a little bit of symmetry, but now they want to put a wing in there or a scrum half or whatever else.
I just think it's the disease.
A second row, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I told you it'd be there. No,
it's like the scourge of international head coaches, though, is picking players out of position. It's very on trend at the moment. I cannot fathom it, how people would look at someone and go, oh, they'll be all right at test level, you know, in a position that they don't play. Davey played at 12 yesterday, didn't he?
No, it was...
Oh, it was Slade at 12, was it?
Slade, right. Yeah.
But yeah,
neither of them can do it.
Yeah, it just looked very, very odd, and you know, both had their moments and stuff. But again, just really, really strange, and that's the real sickener, is to be there 17-0 down, and they're there for the take-in. Is a real kick in the pants.
Yeah, and if you think of it, it's only the steady stream of breakdown penalties that meant they scored any second half points at all. Obviously we fed them the try in the first few minutes, but after the 17-0 point just after halftime, they wouldn't have scored without the steady stream of breakdown pens they were getting from the ref. So, and again, they didn't score a try of their own making. They didn't create a try, and yet Marcus Smith was still man of the match. Barbie.
Crackers. Right, Dan, I'm looking to you for the... Because I've seen this go kind of two ways, still being a bit sceptical like me and other people being actually quite positive about the, you know, about the second half and starting to see things in the backs click. What did you make of the backline play throughout the game?
Yeah, I thought that we did actually see some play from us during the game. So we actually put some rugby together. Which I can't say for England. I don't, you know, for me they didn't put anything together. I you know, we moved the ball around. It still didn't look smooth though. It looked a bit panicked, but and I couldn't quite see. Like you, I was up quite high. Just looking at the pitch, trying to see what like our formation, and it was a bit all over the shop really. So there are positive signs that we did move the ball around and we scored some good tries. So we've got to be, you know, we've got to give a thumbs up for that. But I still think there was loads that wasn't good from us in the back play. And a lot of it, I think, was down to just how poor England were, really.
Oh, Dan, there was me relying on you to bring the positivity.
I can give you some positivity. Yeah, there was a backs move.
Yeah,
from a set piece. I can't remember if it was scrum or line up, but yeah. We did a proper with a bit of deception and sleight of hand, and it got us over the gain line and got things moving. And sometimes when your backs are not going well, something like that will get things going, because the theory that Yestin had about the just waiting for the penny to drop with the backs, that they got to do things off the cuff according to what's in front of them. They just end up banging their head against a brick wall if you lead them to do that. But that move seemed to, I don't know if it was the start of us playing well behind or scoring tries, but it seemed to get things flowing. And once you've got yourself over the gain line, then it's much easier than the crash ball, five fat forwards lying on top of your centre, slow ball comes out, then you do it again, one up. I mean, it's total. I'd rather watch soccer. You know, it's just garbage. I'm not interested in that type of rugby at all.
Yeah, I hear you. I think, I tell you what, there was though. It was definitely a bit of an intent to want to go yesterday. I think, you know, you look at that break from Cuthy early on was definitely encouraging. Problem was, I mean, it must have been two or three times he got away, and there was no one bloody with him. And I know that can happen every now and again, but you'd think when we've got a pretty light, you know, a light mobile back row, there'd be someone in there. Steaming in, there's the ball, and we're off and we're running again. And yeah,
there's no water carrier, is there? There's no water carrier like Sam Warburton used to. Yeah. I know for all his qualities, what he used to do was go around the pitch, making sure we weren't turned over. So on our possession, he would just make sure that he'd secure every ruck that he went to. And it's not really a player like that in the back row or the second row who just goes around. They're all trying to, you know, have their carries and the different stuff that they do, but sometimes you just need a water carrier who's not looking to do much other than
secure ball,
retain possession. Yeah,
that's where I thought that Jack Morgan made a big difference.
Yeah, I thought he was lively off the bench
when he came on. And Jed on the backs, I thought that we needed to see a big game. I think we touched on it, didn't we, before as we were walking approaching Twickenham. from Thomas
mm.
for Thomas Williams, just to have him as a bit of a, you know, a bit of a threat. Not quite sure what he was going to do. Not always passing, and he did have. I agree with you. He did probably have his best game, didn't he, in a Welsh shirt. But he had a decent game. I still think there's more to come from him. But...
Yeah, I do. I just thought we saw some of those, that break in the second half, you know, the basketball pass. That was him, wasn't it, I think? Yeah. It was a little difficult to see where I was. But, yeah, that basketball pass. And actually, I just thought the pass for the Adams try, and just generally, I think the, to use your phrase, the tempo was definitely better than it has been before, I think.
Yeah. I wonder if Faletau had an influence on Thomas Williams playing better.
Yeah, very good point.
The pass, the Thomas Williams pass for Josh Adams' try, world beater Freddie Stewart was all over the shop on that.
He was. And yeah, you're really not sold, are you?
Well, he's really good in the air. Yeah. Like, you know, he's on a par with Liam Williams on defensive bomb defusing, shall we say. Mm. But the rest of his game, he could be that, like I said, he's so tall, he might be a bit like Blair Kinghorn. He doesn't look like he's moving, but he really is.
Mm.
But he doesn't. So far, I don't know what they were going. They were going mad about him in the autumn. Mm. Like he was the new main guy. And he's just all right. You know, he's just good in the air.
Did you see Cuthbert absolutely walloped him on that run as well?
I thought he was going to go off after that because he caught him right.
It was like a forearm one, wasn't it? Not an intentional lead with a forearm, but he's collided with him really hard.
Yeah, what a game from Cuthbert! Absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
Do you know what? I don't think you can understate that, because that was monster. And you know, I've said, you know, I was unsure of his kind of selection, because he'd been good for the Ospreys, but I wasn't sure how impressive that form was. Nailed on that 14 shirt his. I think it was after the Scotland game, actually. And obviously, as it proved out, definitely the right call dropping Lewis Rees-Sammet. As we said, he hadn't looked right beforehand. But, you know, that was definitely a genuinely exciting thing, is there is a player in the back line who can do something out of nothing, make yards, and look like he can score from anywhere out. It really encouraging.
I mean, it's a hell of a story, if you think of it, because he was, you know, everyone's hated player in Wales, and his confidence had totally shot. You could see on the pitch his confidence shot, but Gatland insisted on carrying on pick him. And then he became everyone's sort of pet hate in the Welsh team and all this. It's to the point where, obviously, the goldfish bowl of South Wales, he did the right thing and went away.
Mm.
And come back, and it's like as if he's realised he's never going to be a footballing all-rounder, Harlem Globetrotter type winger. He just knows... He's realised what he's good at, which is being big and fast and strong. And he's comfortable with it. He's improved in the air. But otherwise, it's just the same Cutty. He's just got his confidence back.
Yeah.
It's really pleasing and impressive comeback from where he was, when you consider, on social media and regular media, the abuse he was getting and everything. So it's quite a big story, I think.
Yeah, I was particularly happy from the stands. Yeah, I had a big smile on my face for him. Great.
Mm. Yeah, I thought
he can handle him at all.
Exactly.
Well, he made a muppet out of Jack Noel, former teammate at Exeter.
Oh, he skinned him a couple of, not just running through him, he skinned him on the outside a couple of times.
Yeah, And he went straight through Henry Slade for the first run, straight through him. It was like Slade didn't really want to know it. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. That was what started me off, I think. Yeah. The first Cuthy run got me fired up and then never looked back.
No, it's very very encouraging for him. And, of course, Ryan Elias is in that side to be the pariah that everyone seems to want to stick the boot into now. So which is, not entirely fair. So, anyway, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and we're going to take some listeners' questions. Right, second half of the Attacking Scrum podcast. We've got listeners' questions. We've got a thank you to everyone who sent these in, by the way. So we're going to try and get through a few of these. Of course, we did have one from Richard Idris Jones, which just said, looking forward to hearing the Mighty Murph review, Mike Addington. So, hopefully we got a nice taster of that. As I say, the uncensured director's cut version will be coming soon to a Patreon near you.
With extra F words.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, your run rate for F words was particularly high, even for you in that first half, Murph, so well played. This one is from Tom Mullett. Are Wales the best? Game's dead, so let's chuck it about to instill false hope team in the world. That makes a lot more sense when you see it written down. But yeah, essentially, are Wales better at playing when it looks like the game's dead? Can we actually come out and compete in a game? Dan, field that one first.
Yeah, we do have a knack, don't we? Of, you know, none of the sides building leads, and then it's almost like the shackles are off. Let's start playing. It's so frustrating, though, isn't it? Because we seem to do it like regularly. I don't understand why we, you know, if we look at that England game, why we, you know, we were so off the pace, weren't we? In that first half, we just couldn't get anything going at all. And as we've said a few times, they weren't particularly great at all. Yeah, we were still, you know, we were getting absolutely hammered. I tend to agree with that statement.
Dan, are you Yestin in disguise? What's going on, Murph?
Definitely a Twickenham. I think I said last week we tend to be out of sight with 15, 20 minutes to left and score consolations.
Yeah.
And you could argue that's what, you know, that's, although it was impressive, you could argue that's what yesterday was. Late consolations, because it was only because Dan Biggar dropped goal the last try we had a roll of the dice to attempt to win. Otherwise, if he'd just put it on the floor and taken the thing, there was final whistle. And again, the horse racing form never nearer than the finish line. But you know, it does. I think someone said on Scrum 5 today, we've been down there with the strong sides and got hammered. So it does save us in the record books from looking like we were miles behind if we play well late. So I'm not complaining.
Yeah, we said this last week though, didn't we? Like, this has basically been every single game at Twickenham for the last, you know, 2 years ago we lost the game, scored that wonderful try, and then was there another score late on or something, I think, and Tuilagi got sent off, so the scoreline looked very close. And then 2 years before that, there was we were definitely the second best side, but we had that Anscombe try disallowed, or not given for kind of no real reason. 2016 again, we were outplayed, but I think maybe Faletau scored a try to bring it back in. You know, it's nothing. It's nothing new. It's like whatever that is, the last four or five visits, and it doesn't. You know, I don't take a great amount of consolation to losing to England narrowly. Really, it's still a loss, isn't it?
I tell you what, I forgot until this weekend. We put 40 points on them last year.
Yeah, that is true.
I had forgotten the scoreline. Yeah. I knew we'd won convincingly, but actual 40 points on England in the Six Nations last year. Amazing.
If we're sticking with the horse racing analogies, which, as you know, I'm determined to turn this podcast into a horse racing one. England are a side that they're like a horse who hits a flat spot, aren't they? They certainly seem to be against us. Exactly the same last year when they got themselves back in that game, and then the last quarter just did not turn up. Same thing happened at points against Scotland, and same thing happened yesterday. They just hit a complete flat spot where they seemed to just stop playing.
Yeah, they couldn't get any. They couldn't get anything going whatsoever, could they? And we were all over another five minutes to that game. We would have taken it, wouldn't we? I don't quite know why they switch off so badly as well, because I found myself thinking, oh, is it, you know, they thought they won the game, and then we, you know, we obviously came into it and started playing, you know, playing a bit, but they could have lost that.
That's got to have something to do with it, though, hasn't it? Is because, I mean, no one loses a game from a 17-0 lead, do they? Do you know, I think if Italy was 17-0 up against someone, they wouldn't lose it in the Six Nations. It's just that points gap is huge at international rugby.
I wonder what the record is for the biggest comeback. They normally someone has a stat for that, don't they, on telly? I mean, especially Twickenham. Mm. I mean, 9 points is enough for Twickenham if you against the ref and the crowd and the TMO. Just going back to going back to the ref, if you don't mind, for a few minutes. You know that Tompkins kick through that
Watkins chased,
and we ended up with a scrum five. And there was a period there where England just didn't want a scrummage.
Yeah, I thought that.
They just didn't want to know. It was Wyn Jones and Tom Francis on the pitch with their running props, if you like, in Genge and Sinclair. And they just were refusing to get down. Ended up with a penalty. Instead of going for another scrum, we went to the line-out, which is notoriously flaky at best, our line-out. They should have kept going scrummed and make the... delete my swear word, make the scrummage. And then it happened again then. Later on, we ended up with a scrum on our own five-yard line. And Sinclair just stood up out of one of them. He was down and ready to go, and he just didn't fancy it, stood up and got out. And we ended up with a penalty there. Then, surprise, surprise, once they brought on some scrummagers in the second half, which was Marler and Stewart, their best scrummage, then they wanted a scrummage all the time, and the ref was fine with it. When they were literally refusing to get down sometimes. At one stage, Carl Sinclair was saying, "Oh no, my elbow, ref, my elbow," and then rubbing his elbow. This is the one in 10 minutes on their 5 yard line, rubbing his elbow, then deciding he was ready. Then we go in, and then ended up it collapsed, and we had the penalty and went into touch instead. But we've just been, I don't know, you know, I made the excuse last week about the standing of Gatland means we don't get as much respect from referees, but I changed my mind. I think it might be Alan Wynn on the pitch. His standing globally in the game, you know, most capped player in the world and everything else, he is. If he asks the referee something, they're not fobbing him off. You know, they have to take him seriously. Whereas I think some of the conversations Dan Bigger was having yesterday were just vague. What can we do for you, refs? I don't know if you picked that up on the mic. What can we do for you, ref? But Alan Wynn seems to hold more sway, so I wonder if that's the bit where I'm questioning my sanity. I wonder if the root of it is the fact that Alan Wynn's stature with the referee is not there now. Maybe, I don't know.
Interesting one. What do you reckon, Dan?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I mean, on the scrums and the ref, yes, they were having all sorts of fun and games with him, weren't they? Because he didn't have any authority, didn't have any control, did he? I almost felt, he was completely out of his depth there. It was like a merry-go-round, and if I think now, if Alan Wynn was on the pitch, you can imagine that just probably wouldn't happen, would it? You know, over he comes.
I like to think he wouldn't have gone for touch. You know, if they're refusing to scrummage on their own 5 yard line, you get a penalty. I know sometimes with referees it can be a lottery over which way the decision is going to go. But I would want to keep scrummaging. If they're reluctant to actually scrum against us, I would want to keep going.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose was that relatively early in the game, Murph?
Yeah, like 10 minutes in.
Yeah,
it was after the. Grubber through by Tompkins.
That's right, yes.
Which
it was early
Owen Watkins chased. He chased down outside centre, Elliot Daly. Chased him down, forced him into touching goal in the end. And
that's
we had
right.
a scrum five.
Yeah, I suppose.
But they were just refusing to get their head in at one stage.
It almost feels like a bit of a premeditated move that early in the game, doesn't it? Because actually, the week before, the driving line out went well and we scored our try from it. So I don't know whether that was part of
point.
It. But you're right. There was definite, that might have even been the second scrum of the game, wasn't it? I think there was, I think there had been a scrum before that. And you definitely got the sense that there was, we had the edge on it.
First scrum, we had a free kick, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we did.
If you do get ascendancy in that position, it invariably ends up in a yellow card.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why they're either, they were basically refusing to get down. They were getting penal, like free kicks for early engage and all sorts of weird offences. And then they were looking, when they did offensive scrummage, they were looking for the ground because that can go 50-50 and you end up with a penalty even though you're looking to go to the ground. And I just thought we had a chance to, that's a really strong scrum. Tom Francis is a massively underrated Welsh player. Owen Watkins should have been off mine for HIA.
Well, actually, that leads us perfectly, Murph, onto the next question, which was from Reese Lloyd. Will rugby ever get the message through to kids that head injuries should be treated with the utmost caution, as long as we're letting concussed players like Tom Francis back on the pitch in the biggest of pro games?
Well, both of them, both at the same time. They clashed with each other, didn't they? And they were both, it was like watching Rocky. They were both unable to get up off the canvas and just wobbling and all over the shop. And it's not a good look. Mm. And they're saying there's going to be an investigation now, but I don't know who okayed them to go back on, but...
It's really, really worrying when you look at the way Tom Francis got back up and staggered as if he'd had 20 pints trying to get his way back to his seat in the pub. It was not that was really, really worrying when you saw him again. I mean, presumably there is a very strict protocol for this to happen, and you know, that's what we assume. But again, you've got it's only right that you should question whether that protocol is right. Do you know what I mean? When you see an impact as big as that, because there must be something that you're not seeing.
Even if they pass the HIA, the medical people should, as I understand it, look at the incident. Mm. And if they look completely out of it, the HIA doesn't pass in the assessment, doesn't matter. Mm. If they were all over the shop, which they both were, I didn't see Tom Francis at the time because I was busy looking at Owen Watkins, because Owen Watkins he'd been in a car crash. The fact they both came back is, I don't know, like I say, there's going to be an investigation into it now. So
they both look very groggy, didn't they? I think that if you had a collision like that, you can't. Doesn't matter what happens with the HIA protocol, you just can't. You've got to be off, haven't you? Really, it's a hell of an impact.
Yeah.
It would change things, but that's the only thing I think they can do.
It's people's lives. It's people's lives we're talking about here, though, isn't it? Reece says in the question, it's every level. But you've got two players there that you can only worry about their welfare when you see a clash of heads like that, and that's going to happen in rugby. It wasn't like it was a dangerous incident, a ruck or a high tackle or anything like that. That's just two heads coming together. But it's what do you do to protect players in that scenario? And yeah, you've got to feel like taking them out of the firing line is the most important thing in that scenario. So worrying stuff. Let us tackle this one next. This is from Greg Sherrington. What sparked? We kind of touched on a few bits of this in terms of what sparked the Welsh comeback. But he's also asked a question around the breakdown as well. Is Basham the issue? Is he more of a dynamic open play seven versus Morgan, whose clear out work and over the ball work is better?
Me or Dan?
I think we were kind of we were all stood there waiting, weren't we? Like Welsh forwards at a ruck. I just wanted one of you to come in and clean someone out. Go on, Murph, you take that.
There's definitely, like I mentioned earlier, there's definitely a shortage of a water carrier. It doesn't have to be the open side that does that. It could be any of their back row, really. But it's very early on in his career, and obviously very early on in Jack Morgan's career. So sort of learning the international game still. And I don't know. I mean, he's making an okay start to his international career.
Yeah.
But whether he's that type of player, he does a fair amount of turnover work for his club, but there's only been one, I think, so far this tournament for him. And he's not a game-changing ball carrier. He is a ball carrier, but he's not a game-changing ball carrier. So, we're in a position of strength there because obviously we've got the two very young, promising players and existing sevens out injured. So it's just a matter of who kicks on best from here, because obviously getting into the Welsh side is the start, and then you have to improve after that. So
I have this theory as well that kind of rugby goes in these cycles, doesn't it, where certain patterns of play become very, very not popular, prominent. So, you know, whether it's like the you know, the aerial ping pong and box kicking and things like that. And I also kind of think that sometimes happens in back row play as well. You know, you look at that period where it's very fashionable to have twin fetches and getting players over the ball and stuff like that was, you know, having really mobile back rows and the way Australia did it and stuff like that was very, and Wales to a certain extent, was definitely kind of fashionable and could be very, very effective. I feel like we're in a phase now where you definitely benefit if you've got a really big back row, hence seeing, you know, lots of locks playing at six and all that kind of stuff. I think if you're going to look solely on kind of size, playing a big back row will probably be a better percentage bet than it is picking a mobile back row.
Thing is, when Jack Morgan came on, though, he was, to counter that, he had a massive impact, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and yeah, absolutely.
I think we've been spoiled, haven't we, in the back row for Wales with, like, you know, Tipperick, that can play almost every type of, you know, he can carry hard, he gets over the ball, he's in the wide channels, he's incredible, isn't he? And I think Basham's obviously a very different type of player. And Jack Morgan, I'd say, is a more, you know, he's nuts and bolts. He's a very, very sharp guy at seven, I think. Real thinking man seven. And I had a feeling he would make an impact. Didn't think it would be quite as big as it was, but I think it was monumental, the level of which he did. Basham's getting blamed quite a bit, isn't he, for being not that type of... I don't agree with that. I think that... you know, he's played very well, but it's just he plays in a different way. And then we have to look at the balance and makeup of the entire side, because you need more people to get over the ball if he's playing there. And, you know, the front row, you know, front row hasn't done that. You know, when Dylan Lewis is there, he does, doesn't he? But the front row don't do it. And the second row, not massively either, really. So he's almost on his own. I think it's hard for... I've seen quite a lot of criticism come Basham's way. I don't think that's Basham's criticism to take, really.
It's interesting. I'm a big fan, as you know. I didn't think he had a good game yesterday. But, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And it's the makeup of the whole pack, isn't it? You need... Murph said this, you need someone or a couple of players in that back five to secure ball for you. And you're right, that's probably not necessarily his strong point, but then it doesn't help as well where you give away soft penalties from sealing the ball off. So I don't think he had a good game. I still think he's got a very bright international future because he has this kind of electric pace, and I think he's a very good ball carrier, not in terms of a grunting way, but, you know, he carries strongly if he's like one-on-one with you, you'd back him to fend the player off and to get through that way. So I'm still a big fan of his, and I think he will have a bright future. But, you know, if you were picking the side for next week, I think you'd definitely be tempted to put Morgan into that seven jersey.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I would say the same. I think we gave away far too many penalties, didn't we, in the back row. You look at Moriarty and Basham, and it was, we didn't help ourselves at all. Mm-hmm. We gifted them penalties, really. Gave them that momentum, and it was always going to be so hard. That's where I was so frustrated, because I didn't think we needed to do it. You know?
I think it might be Basham might be a bit of a victim of the media building him up, because they tend to do this with new players on the scene, build them up into being amazing. Like, for example, he got a lot of credit after the Ireland game because he made so many tackles.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were saying, oh, well, he was the one that played well and all that. But, and I at the time, I didn't think too much of it, but none of those tackles were dominant.
Mm.
He just made 15, 16 passive tackles. They were totally on the back foot the whole time. So, you can't get that excited about that. You know, all he's doing is tackling people who are running straight at him, if you know what I mean. He's not taking people off their feet or beyond the gain line or anything. So it's one of those where the media, TV and press and social media talk him up to be something. And then after a while, people like us say, well, actually, he's just okay. He's not as good as you're making out.
Yeah, I don't think it's that he's just okay. I think it's like Dan says, I think that it is about the makeup of the whole pack. And there's always a danger of saying, yeah, of looking at individual performances. You know, that's why player ratings are the most pointless thing in the world, because you know, that you look at an individual performance, but that doesn't, that's not what wins test matches really, is it? Okay, occasionally there's a standout performance from one player that, you know, has been the difference, but you genuinely win test matches because of a unit function, you know, because your scrum went well, your line out went well, because you dominated the breakdown, because your kicking game was better. It's these kind of things that that kind of come into it. So I still think, you know, there'll be certain games that actually will suit a Tame Basham really, really well, or coming off the bench might suit him really, really well. Or indeed, there's you know, there's a period in his career where he's back playing for the Dragons week in, week out, and Tipperick or Navidi's back in that seven jersey, and he develops different areas to his game. So, you know, I certainly don't think it's a question of going, oh, well, actually, this guy's only okay. I think there's clearly a very, very talented player in there, but you're right, it's got to be in the, you know, it's got to be as part of a pack that works completely.
Yeah, it's got a balance, isn't it?
I think I meant only okay at international level. It does not, you know, he's clearly amazing at rugby, don't get me wrong, but he's not the world beater that sometimes they build players up to be, if you know what I mean. But yeah, you know, because in January he was a second coming of our best, you know, our best flanker ever or whatever, you know, and now he's had his difficult second album, which we like to compare with rugby on a regular basis.
Yeah, he's just learning, isn't he, at the moment?
He would be on the bench, you know, if it wasn't for Tipperick's injury. I mean, he would be a bench player at this stage, which is probably, you know, where he should be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. I think we just got to look at, you know, Moriarty and Basham in the, you know, in the back there, you know, together, that's going to work against certain sides, and it's not going to be enough against others, is it?
Good point. Right, let's take this one from Paul Price. Whisper it, but is Tomkin our new inside centre? Dan.
he had a great game, didn't he? I mean, yesterday he played very well. I think he's had a good campaign, to be fair. You know, he has played well, and we've mentioned this a few times, you know, on the pod. Tackled his heart out, carried really well. He was just, you know, really, really gave it everything and some. Couldn't fault him at all. Top performance. But, you know, my point, I still have question marks over whether we can, you know, whether we can build that back line around, you know, around him, really, which feels really harsh saying that, and it's not, you know, it's not like a criticism, really. It's just that's the, you know, the way he plays, the way he plays. But can't fault him. You know, he's one of the standout players on the pitch, wasn't he, for Wales?
Murph?
You can't disagree with the way he played yesterday, but I just think there's something about Tompkins where he's difficult to play with. For example, yesterday, he got a ball going right from a ruck going to sort of blind side and ended up running behind Ross Moriarty. And then, like, literally ran backwards in an arc around Moriarty. So Moriarty got pinged for obstruction and then blamed Moriarty, which I thought was taking his life with his own hands, in a, you know, when Moriarty's blood is up, for God's sake. Like, as if it was Moriarty's fault. But, you know, if you run backwards, your support is stranded. There's nothing anyone can do aside from be wider, you know, than he was. He came on a narrow ball, and that's why it happened. But, he's been a bit of a graveyard for fellow centres, hasn't he? He's the only constant. Everyone else gets bumped off. And we've ended up with a player alongside him who's managed to stick around, you know, and walk in, who was totally out of favour in the autumn and at the start of the tournament, I think.
Yeah.
No, he made it.
It's only these two games. He wasn't even on the bench in Dublin.
No, in Ireland, no. No. But it was the first time he's made the squad in a long time under PVAC. So yeah, I just think he's hard to play with. Like, I can't ever imagine him being in a free flowing back line. I just can't. It just doesn't. Unless he matures into that, I don't know. He's kind of a stop-start kind of a player. There's no, you know, even when he's carrying and running with the ball, you don't really know where he's going, or there's nothing you can kind of play off as a centre partner. So, yeah, but it doesn't stop him being effective. I just don't know how you fit him into a back line.
Yeah, I think like we said last week, I would think he's the kind of player you could bring in when you've got a settled back line. Do you know what I mean? If this was 2015, you know, and you had, I don't know whoever that was, you know, Webb, Bigger, Roberts, and then, you know, Tompkins instead of John Fox when he got injured, and then North, Halfpenny, Liam Williams, that might be, you know, that might be the scenario where you can kind of get the best out of him. But I get what you're saying. I feel really, but you know, I feel like even after that performance, you cannot fault it as an individual performance. Again, very, you know, eye-catching and impressive. But I agree with you, Murph, that I just still sometimes see, you know, you see him running down blind alleys, and does that get the best out of the back line as a unit? And that's kind of the difficulty for me.
Jed, it's kind of like, you remember, we were saying that the Cardiff backline, when they had Halaholo and Ray Lilo, could they, if they connected, it was, you know, unstoppable. Mm. Cardiff win, you know, and it's loads of tries, you know, great rugby to watch. And then the guy's name's mistaken me now in the centre. I think he's from Ponty. Garen Smith, yeah. Garen Smith, you know, straightens up, not flashy at all, but you know exactly what he's going to do in the centre there, and suddenly, you know, things start to look a little bit different.
Sometimes in a game against Treviso, you need a Garen Smith.
Garen Smith, yeah, but and that's the, I think that's the point that we're all probably trying to make, aren't we? With Tompkins, is that he can look brilliant, he really can, and he's got that in him, but. You know, I think it's probably quite hard for the 10 to work with, you know, to work with a centre like that. And also the outside backs as well. Because if someone's cutting out, you know, it's so, you feel so safe if you know, if you have an idea what you know, what they're going to do in certain situations. And I don't think he often knows, which is why he'll score and have man of the match performances and sort of do wonderful things at times, but equally there can be, I think, quite a lot of damage in there as well. And we've got to look at, can we build a back line around that, I think.
I just think, you know, yesterday all the times he went wide, either for Josh Adams' try or one of Cuthie's breaks or any time he went wide, seemed to be, from memory, I could be really wrong, I regularly am, seemed to be when we bypassed Tompkins, give it to someone else,
and they distribute
from there. But
to be fair, he did even get whitewashed, didn't he?
yeah. But from a messy true. Kind of a midfield ruck, you know, not from a flowing back move. It was very Saracens type of a try that was, just like the defence is trying to stretch out wide and you find a gap in the middle. What's that, Dan? What'd you say then, Dan?
I was going to say nothing. And worse than them sort of missing you out on the pass every single time.
yeah.
What's going on?
Just while we're sticking with the centres, we had this one in from Jonathan Davis. Not that one in the centre, obviously. Why can't we pick Scott Williams? Why can't we pick Scott Williams at centre, or will Halaholo ever be fit? Thoughts on those two gentlemen in the centre equation? We had our guest last week, Matthew, banging the drum for Scott Williams as a footballing 12. Keen to get your take on that, Dan.
I think it's a good call. Yeah, plenty of you know, I'm a massive fan of Scott Williams, as everyone knows, and he is a, I was going to say a proper centre. You can't say that, can you? But he's just a great player, and he got it all. Good footwork, good distribution. Can carry as well, and I think he gives some real sort of rigidity to a back line. And he's hard as nails as well, isn't he? Which helps. So yeah, I think there's a it's a good shout to get him to get him back in. We were wondering whether his legs were
my concern. I love Scott Williams, and he was so good for such a long period of time. And I also thought looked equally comfortable 12 or 13 at international level, and that's a really hard thing to do. My concern is again the best form we've seen is, you know, is this season in the URC, and it's Foss-Lass on a Tuesday form, and that's the bit that, you know, would he just look too slow at international level now? I would love that not to be the case. I would absolutely love it not to be, but that would be my worry.
I think there's there's a concern over pace. I think there's also a concern over the amount of knocks he carries. Mm. So Pivac sort of said, hasn't he? We've got to take into account whether the players can actually get through training and then play. And obviously, you know, Tomkins is someone that he's resilient, isn't he? You know, he can train and then he can play and he comes back and he's ready to go again. And Pivac has sort of said that, but not in so many words, to see that he's there, he's ready to, you know, he's ready to go, and that's, you know, is he the sort of last man standing? We've got a lot of centres, haven't we, that are literally hanging on by a thread, and we don't know, because it's not reported, it's not told to us, just the level of injuries these guys carry.
I think we all know that Scott was carrying big injuries for, you know, he never got a proper run at the Ospreys, did he, and missed out on Rugby World Cup, I think, because even though he's technically fit, I think Gatlin was worried about taking him. And again, not, you know, Gatlin rated him hugely highly as well, didn't he? But yeah, I think he was worried about taking him because of the extent of the injuries that he'd had. And to be fair to Pivac, as we've just said, if you end up like Eddie Jones picking players who aren't fit anyway, well, you're on a hide into nothing in that regard. So yeah, I don't envisage it happening anytime soon, if I'm honest.
Well, if our backline was going well, I would say fine, you know, move on from Scott Williams. Mm. But it's not going that well, and he is. It's not a progressive selection because he's long in the tooth, like that. The rip off of Courtney Laws to win the game in was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a teenager when he did that. He was already been around a while. So, we wouldn't be progressive to pick him, but I wouldn't argue against it because the back line is not impressing anyone anyway. So, when this came up last week with Matthew, we immediately said Reese Webb as well.
Mm.
He's just, there's certain players that Pivac's not interested in.
I'm trying to think back, because didn't Scott leave the Scarlets when Pivac was in charge as well?
Yeah, or was that Priestland?
Both, I think. Priestland definitely did. Mm. I think I'm right in saying that. But anyway, right, just to wrap up, fellas, you'll like this. I've had two tweets come in while we've been on air. This one is from is from someone that just says, Cuthbert was really good. Should I pick him at 13? Yours sincerely, W. Pivac. I hadn't seen, that's literally just come in as well. So that was before we.
I like that one.
Even in the wake of us talking about playing players out of position, and then a further update from Greg Sherrington. I hope you've gone full scale language, Murph.
as the
ref deserves it. So yeah, Greg, you'll know at this point that you've not been disappointed by that, and the director's cut to come.
I did restrict myself to Fs.
You did in the second half, Murph. Yeah.
I think I did one bollocks, but nothing beyond that. So I mean, you know, you wouldn't worry about your teenage kids around it. Like they've heard much worse in high school. So don't worry too much. Yeah.
I'm sure
you've been very calm. I thought you were gonna. All I can think of is that you dropped a couple of boxes of roses round to the neighbours on the left and the right to say sorry.
And then
that's why you're just holding it back. Your wife has said, "Don't, you know, no more."
Yeah. It wasn't obviously I was sweating, but it was actual whacking, double-handed. I'm doing a visual recreation on a podcast, which is just sums up my education, I suppose. But double whack of my hands up in the air and whacking down on my leather sofa on either side of me in furious temper at another effing breakdown gone wrong, where we've been either not enough men or bad presentation or whatever problem it was, or just undetected cheating by the ref or whatever. I'm just whacking the shit out of my sofa. So that was probably not just my neighbours either side. That could have been out in the street as well. They were hearing me. So yeah,
brilliant.
That's it.
I'm a respected official at my rugby club. Well, okay, official.
I was going to say an official anyway. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, a parent.
Exactly.
Yeah. At least I didn't fall off a drainpipe. So, you know, there's always. I think there's always lower places you can go to.
You've come a long way in 15 years, Murph.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're all with you on this journey. fellas, I've enjoyed that. It's been a good good debrief on a hard situation. Hopefully everyone listening's enjoyed it as well on your Monday morning after losing to England, which is one of the worst times of the year. We will be back next week to preview the France game. We'll also no doubt have a bit of a wrap up of all the UFC action, and any questions you've got for us, send them in. Final thanks to our sponsors, as always, which is So Coffee Trades. If you want to get some top quality coffee, then you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Say it, Murph.
Coffee, not nicotine, kids.
Absolutely. There you go. Listen to your Uncle Murph, yes. and listen to the attacking scrum. We'll be back to chat rugby with you next week.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Everyone thinks I had a storybook career, that I just sprang into Disney Channel stardom overnight, made millions, and lived happily ever after. Spoiler alert, I didn't. There were countless failures along the way, and there still are. How I deal with that struggle and how I pivot when failure creeps in is what allows me to keep going, keep learning, and keep striving for balance. The Vulnerable Podcast is an invitation to hang out every week with me, Christy Carlson Romano, as I invite friends, celebrities, and experts for in-depth conversations discussing the good, the complicated, the beauty of being human, and what it means to be vulnerable. Join me every Tuesday as we navigate the ups and downs of my guests' paths to success.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com. Sports Social Podcast Network.